This is Digital Story Podcast number 753, August 25th, 2020. Today's theme is a raw look at the image differences between smartphones and cameras. I'm Derek Story. As a guy who loves to shoot with both his iPhone and digital cameras, I wondered how much of a difference there is between the two when I shoot in RAW. The smartphone certainly holds its own when it comes to JPEGs. Is it equally competitive with RAW files? So I conducted a test and compared an iPhone X to an X100V, and I share my findings on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I'm a bit surprised. I haven't done this before, to tell you the truth. And okay, I'll tell you a bit why I probably haven't done this before is because when I shoot with my smartphone, I'm mainly thinking JPEGs. Most of the time I'm thinking JPEGs and, you know, trying to get something quickly, not switching over to another camera app that I have there on the home screen, you know, instead of the regular camera app that just comes with it. And then going into RAW mode and doing all that. If I want to do all of that, then I'm going to pull out my real camera, which I always have with me, or not always, but a lot. I have it with me a lot, okay? So if I'm going to shoot RAW, then I pull that bad boy out. However, it got me thinking the other day. I was shooting some stuff, and I pulled out the iPhone and grabbed some shots, and I said, you know, that's probably good enough. I don't need to pull out the other camera, the X100V. And then I was thinking afterwards, God, you know, there's kind of a lot of dynamic range in that shot. I probably should have done a RAW file. And, you know, I'm kind of second guessing myself there. The JPEG's probably not going to hold up very well in editing. And, you know, all that good stuff. And it got me going, well, I wonder how that RAW file would have looked anyway. Even if, had I gone to the trouble to shoot in RAW on the iPhone, how would have it looked anyway? So I said, okay, I'm going to set up something. I'm going to set up a test here. And once and for all, right, I mean, get to the bottom of this so that when I'm in those situations, I know, okay, it's okay to do the RAW with the iPhone, or no, let's pull the other camera out of my backpack and let's shoot with it. And by the way, the other cameras could be an Olympus, most often a Pen-F, obviously the Fujifilm X100V, a Nikon D610, or the Pentax, you know, the Pentax KP. Those are the ones that I have with me most often. And, you know, these days, because I'm traveling lighter than ever, it's either the Fujifilm X100V or the Olympus Pen-F. Okay, so it's going to be one of those two most of the time, unless I'm on assignment. And guess what? We don't have assignments anymore. So it's probably going to be one of those two cameras. So what I did was I set up a subject. It's a bowl of pears. My pear tree this year in the backyard is just going nuts. I am in pear heaven. First it was tomato heaven because we had a great tomato harvest, and now the pears are just absolutely beautiful. So I put a little bowl of pears together there in natural light, nice light coming in from the north side there, and no fillers, no supplemental lighting, no anything, just the light from the window. And I shot it with the iPhone X in RAW mode in two different apps. I can even tell you what the apps are right now. I can pull them up. Either a Camera Plus 2, was I shot some RAW files with that, and then Halid was the other one. So I shot in RAW in both of those, and then I pulled out the X100V, which is always in RAW anyway, and I shot in RAW with that. Then I go, okay, this is great, you know, same lighting, same position, you know, one right after another, this will be a good test. To decode those images, I used two different apps as well. So I ran them through Capture One Pro 20, and I ran them through Lightroom CC. And I said, okay, this is really going to give me a good lay of the land here. Now, I did use the camera profiles and or the lens profile if they were available in the applications, you know, as you get with RAW files sometimes. And I did add a little bit of warmth to each image through color balance. Other than that, I just let the apps do auto processing on them because, again, I didn't want to subconsciously, you know, bias this by subconsciously making my hand move the clarity slider a little bit one way for one image or the other and all that. I stuck with auto as much as I could, except for adding a little bit of warmth. Now, in Capture One Pro 20, there isn't a camera profile for the iPhone 10. They're probably just going, really? You really want to do that? But in Lightroom, they do have a camera profile, camera and lens profile for the iPhone 10. So I did apply that. And in Lightroom, they also have the film profile, film simulation profile for Fuji. So I used Astia Soft in both Capture One Pro and Lightroom CC in post-production. So, you know, they're pretty much a nice rendering, a nice processing of the raw files with as little intervention as possible. But I wanted to be able to look at them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I didn't want to assault my eyes while doing this test. So I did add those enhancements. As a point of reference, just so that we know what we're talking about in terms of hardware, the iPhone produces DNG files. In my iPhone 10, which is a few years older now, you know, so your iPhone, the mileage may vary in terms of how it renders the raw files, especially if you have a newer one. You know, that could be an area where they definitely did some work. But the iPhone 10 has 12.1 megabyte files. The raw files are 12.1 megabyte, and it's a 12 megapixel camera. Alrighty. Now, the RAF files that come from the X100V, those were 56.8 megabytes compared to 12 megabytes for the iPhone. 56.8 megabytes, and that is a 26 megapixel image there, all right? And then obviously we know there is a sensor size difference between the iPhone and the X100V, with the X100V having an APS-C sensor. Okay. What I'm trying to, you know, I'm not trying to say one is better than the other, anything like that. What I'm trying to say is that if you need to shoot RAW with your smartphone, whether it's an iPhone, Google Pixel, or whatever, how good of a RAW are you going to get compared to RAW files that you already like? It's more sort of that thing. There are no bad guys here, okay? They're all good guys, just some are better than others, right? As you can imagine, I discovered five things doing this test. Not six, not four, but five things doing this test. And I'm going to share those five things with you right now. The first one, you know what? Smartphones continue to impress. I just have to say this, that computational photography and what they're doing with smartphones continue to impress even in this test. The differences between the two files, which I will note in the following four, overall, I just want to say up front that the DNGs from the iPhone were quite respectable, especially in terms of detail. Especially in terms of detail. Now, there, I notice the differences more in tonality and color, but in terms of detail, those iPhone files for something, for a chip that's so much smaller, and you know, for a sensor, you know, that's 12 megapixels versus 26 and raw files that are half the size. I still say, you know what? That's that's pretty darn good. That is pretty darn good. I just want to heap praise on the iPhone and computational photography at the very top, because this was a race that, you know, where the deck was really stacked against it, and it held its own. It definitely held its own. Okay, let's get on to the second one. This isn't necessarily a raw thing at all, but it's so noticeable I had to mention it, which is the depth of field difference between the two images. I shot at f5.6 for the X100V. That camera, I have to be careful about shooting wide open at f2, because if I do, I darn well better have my focus accurate on what I want in focus, because if I don't, I'm probably not going to get it. So I stopped down a bit because it has great fall off. It has wonderful fall off. And I've learned that I have to shoot differently with that camera than the Pen F. You know, the Pen F, the Micro Four Thirds sensor, gives me a much bigger safety net with depth of field. I kind of got used to it. And I have had some rude awakenings with the X100, shooting the same way. At any rate, at f5.6 on the X100V, the falloff was absolutely beautiful. And by the way, there is a comparison shot that you can look at in the show notes. You knew that, right? You knew that it would be there, and you could go look at it and see for yourself. I shot at f2.4 on the iPhone, and it is sharp from front to back, as those small chips will be. It's not a raw thing, but it is definitely a thing when it comes to choosing between the two cameras. If you need fall off at all, unless you've got a scene that is 300 yards behind the subject, you're going to have to go with a digital camera. This is where digital cameras just do so much better. I know there's portrait mode in the iPhones, and there's some of those computational things that work, but if you just want nice, natural laws of physics fall off, the digital camera is so much better. So that jumped out at me. Color science. So the difference was very noticeable to me. The iPhone had a much harder time rendering subtle hue differences. If you look at the picture, there are three pairs. The pair in the upper left-hand corner, the back side of it in the Fuji shot, it goes to this wonderful kind of peachy color that I'm not sure I could even describe the color accurately. And if you had a box of crayons, that color would not be one of the crayons. It was a color science color. It was in between a lot of different hues. The iPhone could not handle that color at all. And so what the iPhone did, if it didn't understand the color or couldn't recognize it or reproduce it, it would basically turn it to a version of brown, okay? And you can see that difference big time between the two shots. There's just more color in the Fuji shot and definitely more subtle colors. So the iPhone shot, the colors that it does represent, it did quite well. For instance, you look at the bowl, the green bowl that the pairs are in, that green is pretty accurate in both of them, pretty similar. It's when you get into those, you get in nature, in fruit and things like that, where you have all these subtle different hues. Color science was much different for the Fuji than it was for the iPhone. And it was the first thing that really jumped out at me. It's almost like the color gamut is narrower for the iPhone than it is for the Fuji. Also, I have to say, this is going to sound funny to you, but the fruit in the Fujifilm shot looked much more edible than it did in the iPhone shot. Both shots were sharp. Both shots, definitely were appealing. But if you asked me, okay, which bowl of fruit do you want to eat from? I definitely would have gone to the Fuji side. It just looked more appealing, more edible. And I thought that was kind of an interesting, I did not anticipate that difference between the two. All right, so that was number three. Number four, sharpness is number four. So both images are sharp, but the characteristics are much different in them. The textures on the pairs from the iPhone shot are much more pronounced. And, I have different types of pairs. One of them, I think, with the texture is an Asian pair. And it has this kind of, this little bit of a rough surface, this very interesting surface. And you can feel it in your hands when you hold it. The iPhone shot definitely captured that surface, but it's almost like it exaggerated it and made it look rougher than it really was, compared to a more delicate rendering from the X100V. So again, I'm not sure that I would want to eat that pear in the iPhone shot because that surface just looked really rough. It's like, maybe I'd want to peel it first kind of thing. Whereas that wasn't the case with the Fujifilm shot. And this was kind of something for me to think about as I was looking at the shot, which is going, we always think of sharpness in kind of a binary way. Well, either the shot is sharp or it isn't sharp, right? It's one or the other, sharp or not sharp. Make up your mind. What is it? But maybe one of the first times where I look at a shot and I go, both are sharp, but the quality of sharpness is much different. One is more kind of digital sharp, the iPhone, and the other is more film sharp, which was the Fujifilm. I guess it depends on your eye. Some people like flat out sharpness at all costs, and so digital sharpness doesn't bother them. For me, that more subtle film sharpness was much more appealing. This was a category I did not anticipate in this test, and it, like I said, it was definitely noticeable. All right, here's the fifth one, shadows and highlights. Again, an admirable rendering by the iPhone. Really, there's a lot of little shadows and highlights that, as you will get with, round objects and a single light source. The shadows were good on the iPhone with decent gradation, but then when you look down in the area where at the top of the pairs, where the stem goes down in there, so there's a little bit more of a kind of a funnel shape there. On the iPhone, that had far less gradation than that same area with the Fujifilm. And so when you started to really study the shadows, you would see that the shadows were a little bit harsher, and you could almost say more contrast than you got with the Fujifilm. And it was very similar for the highlights, in that the highlights for the Fujifilm were much brighter. And you're going, wow, at first you're looking, wow, are those highlights too bright? Should I tone them down? But there was still detail in the highlights. So it didn't lose its detail. They were just brighter. Whereas the highlights from the iPhone rendering look like we had used the highlight slider to damp down the highlights, bringing them more towards, the center of, the histogram. So they were definitely less vibrant. Now, this is definitely a matter of taste, right? Like some people, they don't want those highlights too bright, and they want them dampened down. And, in that case, some folks may look at this comparison and like the iPhone shot better. For me, I just felt like that the Fujifilm shot had more vibrance to it, is more alive, is more like something that you would really see, out in nature. Kind of feel to it. If those highlights are a little too hot, you always can tap them down a little bit with the highlight slider. So that's another area that if you're looking at this, I would look at how it handled the highlights and the shadows. I'm going to tell you right now that if I didn't have, those REF RAW files in the same album as the iPhone RAW files, I would say that those iPhone RAWs were very good. And to be honest, they are. They are very good. But when you start comparing things side by side, and we know this not only with tests like this, but any kind of test, the moment you start get the things side by side, then those little differences become quite noticeable. That leads me to how I would sum up this comparison. It'd be like this. If little differences in color science, in tonality, and in texture are important to you, I think it's still very worth it to carry a digital camera for the images that you want to draw the most out of in post, or if you just want to apply, basic raw processing and call it a day, they're going to look better, right? They're going to look better out of the shoot. And then this gulf becomes even wider when it comes to background control, which that's not attributed to RAW. That's just, that's the lens physics and the sensor size and all that kind of stuff. For a lot of photographers, the conversation would end, right there at, background control with these things. I will say that, background control is definitely a part of it for me. But at the same time, the color science and the tonality are definitely a biggie for me. And the sharpness became a factor that I did not anticipate. So where does that leave me in my practical everyday shooting, which is the whole reason why I did this in the first place, right? So, quick draw, my draw with, the iPhone in one pocket and the, X100V in the other, which one do I do for a given situation? I'm still very comfortable shooting with the iPhone. I'm going to tell you, I'm not really going to mess with RAWs very much with the iPhone. I'm going to continue to shoot JPEGs because the JPEGs are so darn good, right? They're so darn good. If I'm shooting with the iPhone, then in those situations, the JPEGs are probably all that I need. If I truly run into a situation where I want RAW for the shots, like for instance, if you saw Sunday's posting with the grapes that I shot, beautiful bunch of grapes right before harvest, that was raw all the way because, there's all those beautiful subtle colors in there. There's so much going on. I knew I wanted raw. I did not even think about the iPhone or even pull out the iPhone. So I think what has helped me to do is just really understand, yes, you know, my smart devices can shoot RAW and that's great, but I just don't need to. Unless I don't have my other camera with me, then maybe I shoot JPEG plus RAW, which, you know, Camera Plus allows me to do. But if I need RAW, then why not just shoot with a digital camera? And this, it further reinforces the fact that it's worth it for me to carry a digital camera in addition to my iPhone. I like both, I shoot with both, but I still want, you know, those things that I saw in that Fujifilm RAW file. And I'm sure I get very similar things out of the Olympus. I still want those things sometimes. I do. I do. I have a Retina display and it shows them and I want them. So I hope that was somewhat interesting and fun for you. Kind of a cool test. It feels great for me now to have it set in my head how I'm going to approach these scenes when I'm out and about being a nimble photographer. Panasonic will announce via live stream its new Lumix S5 full-frame camera on September 2nd. Here we go, boys and girls. September 2nd. This first part of the article is from DP Review. I have a link to it in the show notes. And there's not much to say here, but I am going to talk about a little bit about the rumor part of it. Panasonic has announced it will hold an online launch event for its new full-frame mirrorless camera, the Lumix S5, on Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. 10 a.m. Eastern Time, alrighty. Alright, California boys and girls, do not party too much the night before because that means 7 a.m. for you. That is early. That is early for a launch announcement. Regardless, aside from the date and time, no further information was shared about the camera or launch event, and I should say no official information. Panasonic suggests keeping an eye on the Lumix S5 webpage and Instagram account, but we will also update this article with a link to the event when it goes live. Alrighty, so that's the kind of the official stuff, and then there's some rumor stuff that I got from Digital Camera World. Here's what they say. The Panasonic S5 will be 1/3 smaller and lighter than the S1, have a 24.2 megapixel sensor, 4K, dual native ISO, and will cost $1,998. So those specs are pretty compelling. Full frame for $1,998 with a 4K, and it's going to be more compact. So again, this is the trend that we're seeing right now from Canon and Nikon, and it looks like Panasonic's going to fall right in line with this, having what they call an entry-level full-frame camera that's easier on the pocketbook and easier on the shoulder as well. So this is going to be kind of fun to watch because, remember, Panasonic is part of that collective. So not only are there their lenses for it, but then, you know, we have Sigma and so forth as well. And, you know, you put a little Sigma lens on this thing and you got a smaller body and it takes really good pictures. Might be, we might have a horse in the horse race after all. I was wondering about Panasonic, the way that Canon and Nikon have been going gangbusters, but this one could definitely put them right in there in the middle of the conversation. So more to report after it happens, but this does look fun. This does look fun. I just want to mention the donation kits for carefree shipping of found film cameras. If you come across a film camera in the closet, in the back of the sock drawer, under the bed, in a shoebox, all these places that these poor cameras might be residing and have been forgotten about, and you want to find a good home for it, go to thenimblephotographer.com, use the contact form, let me know that you would like to donate your film camera lenses, accessories. I will clean them up if they need some repairs, and if I can do them, I will do that. I will get them in the film camera shop, which is still has been very popular lately. A pandemic has been good for film photography. Get it in the hands of someone. I mean, they are just so excited when they write me about these cameras, the people that are going to buy them. You know, they're just so thrilled, and you know, there's a lot of confidence in the film camera shop because I'm very meticulous about how I run it. And so this is a lot of fun. And at the same time, any money that I get from the sale helps support the podcast. It's just win-win all the way around. And then in order to make it easier for you, I have the donation kit, which means after we exchange email from the Nimble Photographer contact form, then I will send you the appropriate size box with a prepaid label. All you got to do is tape the box up, put your camera gear in it, put the label on top, and then set it out for USPS. They will pick it up when they deliver your mail and bring it to me. So it's a pretty cool thing all the way around. I'm trying to make it as easy for you as possible. So if you're interested in this, if you want to help out, just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, let me know what you have, and we will take it from there. My expansion into music and audio. So I wanted to talk about this for a minute because you may have been wondering, like the next two titles I have coming out, they'll be coming out this week. And they'll be on the workshops page on the Nimble Photographer. They're both online workshops. The first one is ripping and cataloging audio CDs. And the second one is enjoying and digitizing vinyl records. And you may be wondering, how do these topics fit in with the traditional content on the digital story that's primarily image-based? And my answer to that is, well, quite well. Reminds me of a great Liberace joke. You know, Liberace was the fantastic showman, piano player, had a great flair for life and costumes both. And I remember one night, Johnny Carson was looking at his hands, and Liberace's on all his fingers, he had these like big, you know, bodacious rings. And Johnny Carson was just amazed, and he's looking at his hands and he's going, you know, my word, how do you play piano, you know, with all that jewelry on? And Liberace smiles and looks at Johnny and says, quite well, thank you. Quite well. Yes, ba-bum-bum. Bum. Anyway, this music stuff does fit in quite well because, first of all, remember, audio has always been a part of us. This is a podcast, for heaven's sakes, right? So I talk about audio. I've done virtual workshops on podcasts and audio-related things. And it's just part of our life, and even more so now than ever because of our pandemic situation. The other thing, though, that I've noticed is that during this period where we don't have as much mobility as we did, music for a lot of people has really become more important than ever. And, you know, we've sort of fallen into this thing with our music, at least I'll just speak for myself. I did. Where music for me became something where I would download something or stream it onto my iPhone. I put in my AirPods and I would listen to it, you know, while I was on the go or doing what I was doing. And that would be it. And then every now and then, maybe I would pull out a Bluetooth speaker and, you know, woohoo, a little Bluetooth speaker and play it that way. And that had become the way that I listened to music. And, you know, music can be so much more than that. When I started working on the CD title, and then this really came to light when I was working on the vinyl title, so I set up a hi-fi system. You know, it was a hi-fi system like was really big in the 80s and 90s and all that, with a stereo receiver amplifier, nice speakers, and a turntable. And I put an album on the turntable and fire up the receiver and turn up the volume a little bit, and then I'd sit back, you know, about 10 feet or so, and the music sounded so different. And if I was playing a song that I knew, if I was playing a song that I had a download of and I played it with this system, it was like a different song. It was like a different song. And I'm going, whoa, what happened to me? How did I get from just always being satisfied, you know, with the sound that comes through AirPods, as opposed to the big sound that the artist actually intended when they made this music in the first place? Now, I'm not knocking digital music at all. In fact, this is analogous to the iPhone digital camera situation. Both are useful. Both, I want both in my life, because there are times when downloaded digital music on an iPhone with AirPods is the perfect thing for the situation. I just don't want to be limited to only that. And I think a lot of people are feeling the same way. And if you're in your home environment and you're going to be here, why walk around if you have this whole room? Why walk around with AirPods in your ears when you could have Polk audio speakers, you know, or JBLs or something playing the music instead? That is also part of it. So the situation that we're in, you know, the new normal that we're in is playing into this. And by the way, just like my analog cameras are really popular right now, vinyl music is really popular right now. I mean, more so than ever, it increased in sales during the pandemic. That's what led me to saying, I want to expand a little bit sideways into these other things. And, you know, audio, professional audio, music, all that just feels like such a natural. It's a love of mine anyway. You know, I was in a band. You know, music has been part of my life. I play instruments and I want to do this as well. So that, I just wanted to give you a little background on that so that you didn't think I'd totally, you know, fallen off the tree limb there and hit my head, right? So if this resonates with you at all, then I think when these two titles come out later this week, you might want to take a look at them. I have to tell you, they are bringing me so much pleasure right now and really helping me get through kind of some of the stir crazy stuff. I'm hoping that there'll be some happy therapy there for you as well. I have a little virtual camera club news for you. I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon members. By the way, Patreon members, I think I've already alerted you to this, that when I release the Enjoying and Digitizing Vinyl Records title later this week, it will be available to you free of charge. Free of charge. So just keep an eye out on our Patreon page, our Inner Circle page, and the download information will be there for you. And you can just, this is a 1 hour video, and it's, I have to say, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. I hope you enjoy it. And I thank you for your support. If you want to become an Inner Circle member and help support this podcast, help support the new projects that I'm working on, then all you have to do is go to The Digital Story, click on the Patreon tile that's on every page. That will take you over to our site. And if you see something that you like there, if it feels good to you, then maybe you'll become an Inner Circle member. And then you can have access to some of the stuff that they've been getting the whole time through. Thank you so much, Inner Circle members. I just love having this community stand behind me as I work on these projects. And finally, a huge thank you to our friends at Red River Paper, our longest running sponsor, the people that make inkjet printing not only affordable, but high quality. And the reason why it's enjoyable is because printing can be a real pain in the arse if you don't know what you're doing, but they help you understand what to do. And therefore, it goes from painful to enjoyable, and then you end up with a print. It doesn't get much better than that. Our longest running sponsor, they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Click on the tile, go over to their Facebook page, and make some prints. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I enjoyed my time with you, working on some great stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe out there, be creative, and then come back and join me next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.